translation. As long as the living entity is not completely self-realized, as long as he is not independent of the misconception of identifying with this body, with his body, which is nothing but a reflection of the original body and senses, he cannot be relieved of the conception of duality, which is epitomized by the duality between man and woman. Thus, there is every chance that he will fall down because his intelligence is bewildered. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami. Here is another important warning that a man must save himself from attraction to women. Until one is self-realized, fully independent of the illusory conception of the material body, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Until one is self-realized, fully independent of the illusory conception of the material body, the duality of man and woman must undoubtedly continue. But when one is actually self-realized, this distinction ceases. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmane Gavihastini Sunichaiva Swapakecha Panditaha Samadarshinaha. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater outcast. Bhagavad Gita 5.18. On the spiritual platform, the learned person not only gives up the duality of man and woman, but also gives up the duality of man and animal. This is the test of self-realization. One must realize perfectly that the living being is spiritual soul, is spirit soul, but is tasting various types of material bodies. One may theoretically understand this, but when one has practical realization, then he actually becomes a pandit, one who knows. Until that time, the duality continues and the conception of man and woman also continues. In this stage, one should be extremely careful about mixing with women. No one should think himself perfect and forget the Shastric instruction that one should be very careful about associating even with his daughter, mother or sister, not to speak of other women. Srila Madhavacharya cites the following shloka in this regard. Bahutvaveena vastunam yathartha jnanam ucchate advaita jnanam iti dat dvaita jnanam tat anyatha yatha jnanam tata vastu yatha vastus tata matihi naiva jnanatyur pedas tata ekatva vedanam. Unity in variety is real knowledge, and therefore giving up variety artificially does not reflect perfect knowledge of monism. According to the Achinta Bheda Bheda philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are varieties, but all of them constitute one unit. Such knowledge is knowledge of perfect oneness. Translation once again. As long as a living entity is not completely self-realized, as long as he is not independent of the misconception of identifying with his body, which is nothing but a reflection of the original body and senses, he cannot be relieved of the conception of duality, which is epitomized by the duality between man and woman, Thus, there is every chance that he will fall down because his intelligence is bewildered. Om agyanati midandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri guruve nama. Namo om Vishnu padaya Krishna pastarya bhutale Shrimati bhakti charu swaminiti namine. Namo om Vishnu padaya Krishna pastarya bhutale Shrimati bhakti vaidanta swaminiti namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschasti Stahine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Not used to these glasses, but they're useful. My wife got them from India for me. Bit of a headache, but anyway, let's see what happens. This chapter particularly describes the brahmachari and the person in the vanaprastha stage. And it also gives a general description of the four ashrams. In the previous chapter, the great Saint Narad has described the Varna situation of society. And now, in this chapter, he describes the stages of spiritual advancement in the four ashrams. Now, it's relatively a lengthy purport of this 10th verse given by Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada quotes the Bhagavad Gita, the very famous Bhagavad Gita, verse 518. In the purport of 518, Prabhupada mentions that a Krishna conscious person does not make distinction between species or castes. A brahmana and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog, a cow, and an elephant may be different from the point of view of the species, but these differences of body are meaningless from the point of view of the learned transcendentalist. For the learned transcendentalist sees with equal vision. And it is this is due to their relationship to the Supreme. For the Supreme Lord, by his plenary portion as the Paramatma, he obviously exists in everyone's heart. Now, such understanding of the super soul, of the Supreme, is real knowledge, Prabhupada mentions. This is real knowledge. As far as the bodies are concerned, in different castes or different species of life, the Lord has equal vision also. Because he treats every living entity as friend, and yet maintains himself as Paramatma. So Prabhupada, in the purport of that 18th text, 5th chapter, mentions that the Paramatma is present in both the outcast and the Brahmana. Although the body of the Brahmana and that of the outcast are not at all the same, but it's the same Paramatma which exists. The bodies are fully material. Prabhupada mentions towards the end of this 10th verse, he mentions that the similar characteristics of the soul and the super soul are that they are both conscious, eternal and blissful, Satchit Ananda. But the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of the body, whereas the super soul is conscious of all bodies. The super soul is present in all bodies without distinction. Prabhupada mentions also that in the purport, the Achinta Bheda Bheda philosophy of Lord Chaitanya, meaning inconceivably oneness and difference. Now regarding this, there is much detail in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. However, Prabhupada in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya pretty much summarizes things. And he states that from the Bhagavatam we know the substance as well as the relativities in their true sense and perception. The substance is the absolute truth, the supreme personality of Godhead. And the relativities are the different forms of energy which emanate from him. Now, since every living entity are all related to his energy, to the absolute truth's energy, there is nothing really different from the substance. Prabhupada's mentioning time and time again, quantitatively, the soul and the super soul are the same, but qualitatively, they're different. Because why? The soul can only be in one body, whereas the super soul can be in countless bodies. Countless bodies. In this connection, Lord Chaitanya cites a verse from the Vishnu Purana, 1:22:52, that everything that is manifested within this cosmic world is but the energy of the Supreme Lord. As fire emanating from one place diffuses its illumination and heat all around, so the Lord, although situated in one place in the spiritual world, manifests his different energies everywhere. Indeed, the whole cosmic creation is composed of different manifestations of his energy. That pretty much sums it up. Of course, in essence, the principal subject matter of this verse and the purport which Srila Prabhupada gives here is really the attraction between men and women. So in essence, better somehow to develop an attraction or attachment to the Supreme Lord. Because by so doing, then we'll be successful. By developing that attachment. And we can see that there are countless examples of that. How devotees develop an attachment to the Lord, and to the extent that they want to marry the Lord. Classical example, in the Mahabharata we have Draupadi Maharani. Draupadi, prior to the Swayamvar, wanted to marry Krishna. She literally fell in love with him. And unfortunately it didn't happen for her, for Krishna had other plans. To the extent that Draupadi, when in the house of her father, the palace of Draupadi, she had a parrot. And this parrot was Shyam. It was black. a black parrot. And there was a name-giving ceremony for the parrot as well, when she had acquired the parrot. The parrot's name was Nilamani, another name of Krishna. So one time, the palace of Draupad, the Lord would visit quite often when he was traveling. And now and again he would stop and rest for the night in the Panchal kingdom. And one time he was there, Draupadi had no idea that the Lord is there. And her maidservant by the name of Nitambini. Nitambini was also the friend or the sakhi of the Lord, so she knew what was going on. And she was narrating to Draupadi the pastimes of the Lord. And just by hearing these pastimes, Draupadi developed an attachment, an attraction. To the extent that that particular night when she then awoke, the parrot kept on chanting, Krishna, 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 this parrot was chanting in the courtyard. And it kept on going and on, which was really disturbing the Supreme Lord, who was resting in another chamber. And it was disturbing to him. But somehow then, Draupadi came out in the courtyard, and she attempted to calm down the parrot. And she kept on saying, Nilamani, Nilamani, calm down, Nilmani, calm down, calm down. When Krishna heard Nilmani continuously, he was pacified. It was soothing to him. And he inquired that, who is this person chanting my name? First he was disturbed because the parrot kept on chirping away and chanting Krishna, Krishna. And then of course Nitambini, the maidservant, mentioned to him that it was Draupadi who was chanting. And then when Nitambini came into Draupadi's chambers and said, look, you better get ready because Krishna is here. Draupadi was surprised that, my God, Krishna is here. Wow. Let me immediately get ready and meet him. And even without appropriately attiring herself, Draupadi was very attached to wearing simple clothing. She would wear a white sari with gold border. And she didn't really like jewelry. So she would just wear garlands. Even her ankle bells were made out of blue roses. So she immediately began to make a garland for the Lord, blue roses, so that she could offer that garland to the Lord. And she's taking her time. By this time, the Lord is about to depart. Immediately her maidservant appears and says, you'd better hurry up because he's about to leave. So then she rushes out with the garland. And as she is there in the assembly of Draupad and others, Draupad actually approaches the Lord, addresses him, and he says, I'd like to offer my daughter to you. To which Draupadi was delighted. And she had the garland. So she's about to garland him. But unfortunately, the Lord steps back and he doesn't accept the proposal. So the marriage is not accepted. The Lord then explains that for me, it's important that she marriage takes place with Arjuna. And explains to Draupadi that this alliance will be better for you. So of course then, Draupadi manages to develop an attraction, an attachment to Arjuna. But in true sense, this is what our mood should be. Try and develop that attachment to the Lord. Because the attachment to each other, men and women, is a blasted nuisance. It's a damn nuisance. Because without it, without that attachment, we would all be eligible to enter the kingdom of the Lord. We could all go back home, back to Godhead. But it's this blasted attachment which keeps us here. It's a damn nuisance. A great pity. One time, Lord Chaitanya instructed Nityananda, it's about time you get married and become responsible. So the Lord Nityananda, following morning, literally awoke very early in the morning. And he grabbed the hand of his servant. At that time, the servant was Uddaradatta. Uddaradatta was a merchant, not a merchant banker, but a trader. And he was serving the Lord. And he says, where are we going in this obscene hour? Very early in the morning. He says, we're going to a place called Ambika Nagara. And so Uddaradatta said, well, who's there? And Nityananda said, don't worry about that. And they both rushed off. They get to Ambika Nagara, which is a village where two very important devotees reside. Suryadas Pandit and Goridas Pandit. It's the house of Suryadas and Goridas Pandit. Suryadas Pandit is the elder brother, and he's a devout devotee of Lord Nityananda. And Goridas Pandit, the younger brother, is a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. So when Lord Nityananda approaches the house with his servant, Suryadas comes out of the house and he sees that the Lord is approaching. And immediately he pays his prostrated obeisances and then says that now my life is successful, for you have appeared outside my house. Lord Nityananda pretty much says, enough of all that. I have come here to accept your daughter in marriage. I'd like your daughter's hand in marriage. Suryadas Pandit was quite shocked. And he said, you may be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but there's a lot of things to consider. Caste. I'm a Brahmana. And by the way, you're an outcast. We have to look at the astrology. You know, I'm sorry, but I can't accept. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're refusing. So of course, the Lord, being such a great Avaduta, turned around and left the premises. Suryadas Pandit, he went inside the house and he called a meeting with all the family members. And he was quite bewildered, actually. Because at that time, Jogamaya had stepped in and he was bewildered because he refused the proposal. And he enters, and Goridas Pandit, he's speaking to Goridas Pandit, and he says, well, I've got something to tell you all. All the other family members were there. But before I mention what I have to mention now, I must say that I had a dream last night. And in my dream, a chariot appeared outside the house. A humongous chariot, gold, pure gold, and a Herculean person was seated on it. Very well built, fair, and on his right shoulder he carried a plow. On his left hand he had a stick. And he got off the chariot and he said, is this the house of the Pandit? And my dream broke. So Goridas was wondering, Okay, so let's hear the rest of it. So Suryadas, he mentions, well, Lord Nityananda just appeared. Of course, in the dream, it was Balaram, Lord Balaram. And he said, Lord Nityananda just appeared and he was asking the hand in marriage of Janava. And I refused. Was I completely foolish? How did I refuse? And as soon as Janavama, she's at the back in the kitchen, listening to what's going on. As soon as she heard that the marriage proposal had been refused, she collapsed. She fell. And everything on with her also collapsed, making a tremendous noise. So everyone then rushes to the back of the kitchen and realizes that the young girl had collapsed. So they take her to the front of the veranda. And immediately Suryadas Pandit, he says to Goridas, go and get a vaid. Go and get a doctor. And so immediately they get a vaid, a doctor, and the doctor turns up there and sees, inspects. And he says, well, now I think you better take her to the bank of the Ganges, because there's no way she'll survive. She's about to die. So when Goridas Pandit, Suryadas Pandit, understand that she's about to go, the daughter, the eldest daughter, and they're about to take her to the bank of the Ganges. But just before doing that, she's completely unconscious, literally lifeless, because the news of the refusal was so strong to her, for she's the eternal consort of the Lord. So it's devastating for her. So immediately the two brothers went running to find where Nityananda is. And Nityananda, the Lord, is sitting underneath the tree, which is the normal case. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Gaur Nitai ki jai. And the two brothers, they're coming forward and they pay their obeisances. And the Lord strokes their backs and he's amused. He smiles. And immediately Suryadas Pandit apologizes that you please come back to the house. And so both the Lord, Uddara Datta, the servant, Uddara Datta, they go back. And an amazing arrangement is made whereby the initial marriage ceremony begins. And Janava revives consciousness immediately. She's still on the veranda, but when from a distance the Lord is appearing, it is mentioned that the aroma of the Lord goes through her nostrils and she revives consciousness immediately. And then immediately before the Lord actually comes closer, she covers herself up and disappears inside the house. When the Lord is outside the house, she is brought outside and three times circumambulated. She circumambulates the Lord three times, signifying that the proposal has been accepted. Then an incredible wedding takes place. Janavama is very nicely decorated by hundreds of women. Very nicely decorated. And several days after the wedding, the Lord stays at the house of Suryadas Pandit. And one day, lunch is served and everyone is serving the Lord. And as he's being served, the bhog, the younger sister of Janavama is Vasudama, and she's serving. So she has a pot on her left hand and a spoon for serving with the right hand. And her sari veil uncovers. So she's in a dilemma. What to do? So immediately what she does is she manifests her forearms. And immediately she covers herself. This is the appropriate etiquette. So when the Lord observes that and witnesses that, he then turns to Suryadas Pandit, the father, and he says, as dowry, in dowry, I'll accept the hand in marriage of the younger daughter as well. So both Janavama and Vasudhama are then given to the Lord. So in essence, to develop an attachment to the Lord is obviously the most important thing to do in life. Because the attraction to each other is such a nuisance. In the Nectar of Devotion, it is mentioned and stated that how can a person take pleasure in the enjoyment of sex life in this body, which is a bag of skin and bones, filled with blood, covered with skin and flesh, which produces mucus, horrible mucus, and smells vile. Such is the attraction, liquid beauty. Further in the Nectar of Devotion, there's many instructions regarding this. Kuveri Prabhu, who's a very dear friend of mine, he's reading the fifth canto right now. And he's literally studying it. And I receive many texts from him. And of course, when you're busy, oh, not another Bhagavatam text. But he sends, and this one's so befitting to our verse here. It's from the fifth canto, 14th chapter, text number 35. And it's the purport, a portion of the purport of that verse. Prabhupada mentions, the monkey-like conditioned soul, first becomes attracted and attached to sex. And when intercourse actually takes place, he becomes more attached. He then requires material comforts, apartment, house, food, friends, wealth, and so on. In order to acquire these things, he has to cheat others. And this creates enmity even among his intimate friends. Sometimes this enmity is created because between the conditioned soul and the father or the spiritual master, unless one is firmly fixed in the regulative principles, one may perform mischievous acts. Even if one is a member of the Krishna consciousness movement, we therefore advise our disciples to strictly follow the regulative principles. Otherwise, the most important movement for the upliftment of humanity will be hampered due to dissension amongst its members. Those who are serious about pushing forward this movement should remember this and strictly follow the regulative principles so that their minds will not be disturbed. In essence, to conclude this verse, which really details the futility, the sheer futility of attempts for sensuous happiness. It also establishes the eternality of the soul. The ultimate pleasure, as it were, the so-called ultimate pleasure, is certainly the relationship between man and woman. That's the highest pleasure, which is so futile. And this futility is very much stressed by the great Thakur Bhaktivinod in his profound poem, which I'm sure some of you have heard before, the Sharagri Vaishnav. Sharagri means defender or protector of the devotees. And the legendary Thakur Bhaktivinod, he compiled this in 1871. And it's such an amazing poem. I've read it on numerous occasions. It's written in Old English. And I thought I'd finish off with reading it again. And if Paravida Prabhu was here, he'd be very delighted. But he's not here. But here goes. Alas for those that spend their days in festive mirth and joy. The dazzling deadly liquid forms their hearts for'er employ. The shining bottles charm their eyes and draw their hearts' embrace. The slaves of wine can never rise from what we call disgrace. Was man intended to be a brute in work and heart? Should man, the lord of all around, from common sense depart? Man's glory is in common sense, dictating us the grace that man is made to live and love the beauteous heaven's embrace. The flesh is not our own, alas, the mortal chain a frame. The soul confined for former wrongs should try to rise again. Quite profound, isn't it? Why then this childish play in that which cannot be our own, which falls within 100 years as if a rose are blown? Our life is but a rosy hue to go ere long to nought. The soul alone would last for e'er with good or evil frout. How deep the thought of times to be, how grave the aspect looks, and wrath in awe become, O I, when reading nature's books. Man's life to him a problem dark, a screen both left and right. No soul hath come to tell us what exists beyond our sight. But then a voice, how deep and soft, within ourselves is left. Man, man, thou art immortal soul. Thee death can never melt. For thee thy sire on high has kept a store of bliss above. To end of time thou art, O his, who wants but purest love. O love, thy power and spell be nigh, now melt my soul to God. How can my earthly words describe that feeling soft and broad? Enjoyment, sorrow, want but lots, to which the flesh is heir. The soul that sleeps alone concludes, in them it hath a share. And then, my friends, no more enjoy, nor weep for all below, the women, wine, and flesh of beasts, no love on thee bestow. But thine to love thy brother man, and give thyself to God, and God doth know your wages fair. This fact is true and broad. Forget the past that sleeps, and ne'er the future dream at all, but act in times that are with thee, and progress thee shall call. But tell me not, in reasoning cold, the soul is made alone by earth's mechanic lifeless rules, and to destruction prone. My God, who gave us life and all, alone the soul can kill, or give it all the joys above, his promise to fulfill. To push on thy onward march, O soul, against an evil deed that stands with soldiers' love and hate, a hero be indeed. Maintain thy past in spirit world as firmly as you can. Never let never matter push thee down. O stand heroic man. O Sharagri Boishnobo soul, thou art an angel fair. Lead me on to Brindaban, and spirit's power declare. There rests my soul from matter free, upon my lover's arms, eternal peace and spirit's love are all my chanting charms. Thakur Bhakti Vinod Ki. Incredible verses there. Of course, half of them I didn't really understand. Old English. But it simply signifies the futility of sense enjoyment. And in essence, the relationship between man and woman, in the material sense, is exceptionally futile. I just wish I had realized that. Far from it. Far from it indeed. Hare Krishna.